welcome to Show Me Your Mic, the podcast about podcasting, which you can find online at goodstuff.fm/SMYM or on Twitter at SMYM_FM. I'm your host, Chris Enns, and for this episode, I've got Caleb Wojcik, who runs DIY Video Guy, an audio podcast and video podcast, two separate shows, each one teaching what he's learned about running a business involved in video production. We talk about charging money for your work, focusing on clients versus marketing your podcast. It's a bit of a show me your business discussion and the value of dipping your toes into video podcasting if you've only ever done audio. My thanks to A Small Orange for supporting this episode of Show Me Your Mic. More about them and how you can help out a little later on in the show. For now, here's my conversation with Caleb.
Might as well be recording everything we say ever about equipment because someone will be interested in it.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm always interested in that stuff.
Yeah. You haven't gotten tired of it?
No, not really. I've always been a techie kind of person. When I was in middle school, late middle school, early high school, I built my first PC from scratch. I had no idea what I was doing, and there was no YouTube back then for me to figure out why this thing that I spent $1,000 of my own money on when I'm, 14 won't turn on, and it's just a stupid jumper cable I had to move.
Yeah.
So I hired some other kid at $50 an hour, and he walked in, moved the jumper cable, and was like, that'll be $50. I think that was my first thought of maybe I should be an entrepreneur because if you know how to do something, someone can pay you. But I've always been super techie and a lot of video game playing, a lot of computer stuff. Never really got into programming, but just web stuff. I don't know. I was early on, IRC to jump into Counter-Strike matches and all this kind of stuff. So I've just always been involved in tech. And so it's kind of funny now that I do a lot of audio and video stuff because I still nerd out about everything.
Yeah. I know. I kind of wait for the, I've sort of, since switching to a Mac, and I know you're a Mac guy, you do sort of give up a bit of that, installing the new video card and lusting after some Sound Blaster 16 sound card or whatever upgrade.
Yeah.
But I still don't get tired of, you sent me the photo of your gear and your setup. And the first thing I saw was the Mac Pro sitting right there. And other folks might have looked at it and thought it was a trash can sitting on your desk or whatever. But right away I was like, oh man, he's got the Mac Pro sitting right there. That's awesome.
And I do so much video stuff. Actually, I got it when I was working at Fizzle because I was just cranking on videos and I was working on a 2011 MacBook Pro and you can only do so much rendering with that thing. So,
and was it this is an audio, primarily a podcast, audio podcast kind of show, but I love video stuff. And so if you're not interested in just hearing discussions about video as well as audio podcasts, you can skip episode 80 of Show Me Your Mic and wait for episode 81, I guess, because there'll be some video discussion as well. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine people being that disinterested that they'd want to just turn it off. But anyways, was it is it night and day difference going to something like a Mac Pro from the 2011 MacBook Pro?
Yes.
Rendering, et cetera?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I had upgraded the RAM on my laptop a little bit, but I mean, you're using an integrated Intel HD 3000 or some crappy video card that can barely render 1080p playback when you're editing. And so I'd play things back at half speed. When I did multicam, it would just chug so bad that I'd have to close multicam and then open it and close it and open it when I wanted to change angles. And it just wasn't feasible. And now I hate editing video on my laptop. Like when I travel and I try to do something.
Oh, yeah.
It's just frustrating. And so it's kind of good because then I just batch everything for when I'm at home editing wise. And I don't really have to worry about it. It's just something I use all the time. And so when people balk for adding a faster hard drive or more RAM or whatever into their laptop that they touch more than anything else in their life, usually for work. So I don't know. It's worth it to me to invest a little bit on that stuff. And desktop for me for video stuff. And I mean, audio, even if you're recording a lot of audio on the go, you're editing it at a desk 90% of the time probably. So might as well invest in a good computer that's going to run it.
Yeah, I was trying to think of for podcasters, audio podcasters anyways, there probably is less motivation for the Mac Pro thing unless you're doing that scale of a computer anyways, unless you're doing some sort of crazy 10-track audio podcast discussion thing and bouncing it maybe. I would guess even bouncing an audio track out of I think you said you used Audition, but you know, it's seconds instead of minutes probably or something like that.
Yeah, even the simple things like analyzing it for like removing noise or changing the sample rate or anything like that, it's just faster.
Yeah. Yeah.
So instead of walking away, I just sit there for a second.
Right.
And try not to open a tab in Chrome or something.
Try not to get distracted. I think. The whereas those of us on older machines or whatever, you're kind of like you, I know, like, it actually hinders your creativity, I find, because it's kind of, that's where I bump up against that with my, I'm on like a 2007 iMac that I still edit some video on, and it's great. Like, it's funny because the screen is great. Like, it's not a Retina iMac, obviously, but it's a nice big screen, easy to see all the stuff, and HD looks decent on it and stuff. But yeah, if you want to try and apply an effect or do something in motion to add a title, it's just like, I can't sit here and fiddle for an hour just to like change the font and wait for it to render. And then, so you end up just doing very little with it kind of stuff. And
screen space is huge. I got a Thunderbolt display for myself and one for my wife, and she does photography. And so we each have our own. And for the longest time, we were just, you know, on our 13-inch laptops, just saving money. And then I got some refurbished ones for, I think, $830, probably a couple years ago. And they're probably still around that price because Apple doesn't change prices ever. But
yeah,
until they come out with a new, I don't know, 5K or 8K or whatever they're going to do, monitor that's separate from an iMac, that is one of the best investments I've ever made. And now when she's not using hers, I steal it and I put it on my desk.
Nice. So that, I forget now, that was probably in the shot that you sent me. I didn't know.
Yeah, I think there was just one. Like, yeah. Right now there's two, but then she has to ask me to move it back to her desk sometimes. But you can use, I mean, you could get a MacBook Pro or a Mac Pro or anything and use that iMac as an extra display. You just need a $50 Thunderbolt cable, and then you just hit a little shortcut and it'll add it as another display, which is nice.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it's not a complete bookshelf. No, what's the blank
bookend?
Bookend, yeah, that's what.
Yeah,
fancy.
Yeah, definitely don't throw that thing out. That's a solid display there.
So, anyways, going back to podcasting, what sort of got you into podcasting originally? Like, I don't know if I became aware of you sort of around Fizzle days, I think, and probably a little bit sooner than that, just from random links people would send around and stuff about stuff. But what sort of was your introduction to podcasting?
The first podcast I ever listened to, I think, was Rebel FM, which was a video game industry, people that worked at like Electronic Gaming Monthly and eventually at IGN. They just had a podcast where they sat around their living room after work and talked about video games. And one of my friends in college said, hey, you should listen to this. It's like reading a video game magazine, which I used to do all the time when I was a kid, but you can, you know, listen to it while you walk to class in college. And so I started listening to that, and I listened to that for a couple of years before I really found any other ones. And this was in probably 2007, 2008 timeframe. And there were just not that many other podcasts. I think maybe there was This American Life back then. But then I got into wanting to be a little bit more productive on my drive to work, other than let's do a video game podcast. So I found some entrepreneurial ones. I listened to Tropical MBA, which I think had a different name at the time. And then that helped me stumble upon Smart Passive Income podcast with Pat Flynn. And now Pat Flynn and I are doing work together. So it's been a long process of listening to podcasts over the past decade or so, but I started my first one called the Cubicle Renegade Podcast when I was talking about entrepreneurship, and that was a few years ago.
Right. And so that was your first venture into actually being on the show or on a podcast yourself, right?
Yeah.
Experience. Okay. And was there stuff in between there and then Fizzle, or how did you sort of transition from that experience, and then where else did podcasting take you, I guess?
Well, I got to about 24 episodes of that show. Some of the last ones were while the Fizzle show was going, but once we committed to doing a weekly episode at Fizzle, I pretty much stopped mine, because mine was an interview show, and I felt like there were enough of those about entrepreneurs at the time. And so I focused my podcasting energy into the Fizzle show. And then once I left Fizzle to do stuff on my own full time, then I launched DIY Video Guy as a podcast, both an audio and there's a video one that's completely different, but we can talk about that later.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's, I'm trying to decide which direction to go on there, I guess, but the having the audio podcast and a video podcast or video podcast and YouTube channel, I guess, related to that, obviously keeps someone busy and on its own, and then also running a business doing the thing that you're actually talking about, which is, I have to say, is one of the reasons why, like, I know, like, there's the whole industry around, you know, selling your ebook and selling your course and that kind of stuff that exists in the web, and it's kind of like this own little insular thing that where it seems like often the people doing, telling you, giving you advice aren't actually doing the thing anymore because they're just making money giving advice about doing the thing that they used to do or maybe never did, who knows. But what I've appreciated about you is that you're actually a practicing, in your case, video guy. You make your living, make part of your living anyways from that, and it's not just a thing that you used to do or never did and just kind of like realized you could teach people about it, which I'm sort of smearing that whole industry with a bad brush, but I know there's genuinely good folks doing good teaching in there. But I've really enjoyed the stuff I've seen from you and heard and watched is someone who's actually practicing the craft as well as trying to then teach people who are coming along sort of behind or beside or whatever you as well. And how do you, my question in all that ramble is how are you sort of juggling, balancing client work with weekly, daily, almost, you know, scheduled stuff that you have for podcasting and video stuff that you're putting out as well? What's the secret, Caleb?
Oh man, there's not a secret, and sometimes you fall behind schedule. Just recently missed a couple weeks with my podcast for the first time for this one, and it was because I had multiple trips with clients, I had some time off, I had a product launch, and I just missed weeks. I just missed them, and that's painful for me to miss weeks because I know how important consistency is. But to chime in on your point about people that want to teach something and they haven't done it before, I think that's a big problem too. And I feel like I tried to do that with personal finance a little bit. And there's something to be said about sharing your journey of learning something, but when you switch to I'm an expert and I'm going to charge you how or to learn how to do something, that's completely different. And the cliche is that those that can't do teach, but I think those that do really well should teach what they know. And so I'm trying to do both, and it's challenging to balance, you know, setting aside time for each because, you know, clients, they pay me directly, and I always feel like they're a boss in a way. I just have a lot of different bosses, so their stuff typically comes first, but I do have to make sure I set aside time for everyone else that's not directly paying me like a client is. So it's just an interesting balance between, okay, how much can I actually do each week, batching it when you can. The biggest thing is just planning out what the episodes are going to be about. So when I don't plan out what the episodes are going to be about, when I don't know who's going to be on them or what the topic's going to be, then I'm not outlining it a week in advance or thinking about it or planning questions or reaching out to somebody to schedule it. The biggest thing is just knowing what's coming up next week or this next month, and then it just gets done.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, and on top of all those things you listed for yourself, you're also like legitimately responding. Like often people say, yeah, email me and I'll get back to you and happy to help. And then you email them and they don't actually ever respond because they're so buried under email. But like that, the week before, I think your product launch, I emailed you a rambling question or whatever. And then the next day I got your email about your product launch. And I was like, oh, well, obviously he's going to be busy. But then a few days later, you emailed me back with, you know, responses. And of course there was actually like a very easily, if I had just looked a little bit harder, findable resource for the question that I was actually asking you, still taking the time though to respond. And that is, I know, a struggle that, especially for a lot of podcasters who are doing this as I am, as a sort of side thing, as a hobby, in addition to the maybe their paying job or paying business, in my case, it's tough to, like you said, you're responding to me, let's say, using me as the bad example or whatever, as somebody who, I'm not giving you money directly. I might buy a course from you, let's say, your video course, but building up that sort of credentials and referral and expertise as a video guy, but at the same time, you know, you've got client A knocking on your door who's got, you know, a wad of cash in his hand just to make me a video kind of thing. And that balance must be, like you said, just kind of tough to sometimes keep that going. Because obviously the internet marketing side is kind of going to get you new business, but there's also the business in front of you at hand to be done, I guess, right?
Yeah, and when you do teach what you know, so if you taught podcasting, for example, then if you had people that wanted to hire you as a consultant to do that thing, then they know that you know what you're talking about. And so that's part of the reason that I do it, is if I teach video and I show through the videos that I make that I can make them well, that they look good and sound good and that they're engaging and that I have an audience behind them, that means I can do it for somebody else as well. So it's kind of a portfolio. It's like an active portfolio of what you're able to do. And I think that that's a good way to do it. Now, video is an easy thing to say that for, but you can do it with any kind of visual thing that you do, any kind of art, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, I think, where folks maybe are, you obviously sort of enjoy the act of, what am I trying to say, like publishing the podcast and putting that out there. It's obviously something fun, because I would guess in the short term anyways, I mean, hard to know long term, but I would guess in the short term, you could probably double down on just making videos for clients, let's say, and say nuts to the web or whatever, right, and make more money in the short term anyways, just doing client work. But there is an enjoyment obviously in this, as well as the marketing angle that, you know, long tail, long term kind of stuff is paying off already, I would assume, and will continue to in the long run.
Yeah, and I think that part of the reason people go towards the information product or some sort of affiliate or sponsors or anything like that is that, you know, working with clients isn't very easy. It's complicated to just run a client-based business, some sort of consultancy, where you have to deal with the ebbs and flows of work coming in. You have to travel often. You have to bill people. You have to do estimates and make sure that you're going to be paid well. You're going to have people try to negotiate you down. It's just not easy. It's way easier to get a regular job. And lifestyle wise, doing information products and blogging and podcasting and making videos and selling courses and all that kind of stuff is easier lifestyle wise. And so I think it's a little bit sexier for people to want that instead of, you know, doing client work. But I think the natural progression from having a boss and having one person or one company that's in charge of you is to go to client work and scale it a little bit more. And then you go from one boss to 10 bosses. And then if you create a course, maybe then you have 100 people that paid you money and you have 100 bosses that can email you and ask you things. So I think you have to scale it, going from one boss to suddenly I'm going to have 5,000 customers buying my ebook or something is not an easy journey. So to make it easier, you should be doing higher dollar valued things for less people and work your way towards the products.
Yeah. And it definitely helps with paying the bills and keeping, you know, in my case, or in another case, like a family afloat or whatever, obviously, depending on your life situation, as far as who you're responsible to for. It's one thing to, you know, put it all in and just eat ramen noodles for months or whatever, because you're buying into this thing. But yeah, if you have mortgages and things like that to be paid, it kind of helps to have those bigger checks that are, in a sense, easier to get, but take a little more work, I guess, than the long production of a course or ebook or a thing like that. So
yeah, exactly.
There was one episode.
It's faster for one person to pay you.
Yeah.
Like when I left Fizzle, it was like, okay, how am I going to replace cash flow? And it's client work first, because it's quicker.
Yeah.
To sell one person than it is to sell 100 or 1,000.
And I think often, like, I remember, not to turn this into a advice show for entrepreneurs.
Business.
Yeah. But I know for me, years spent wishing I could run my own business, thinking I could. And then when I finally actually did take the leap, which was still, like, it's scary and it's terrifying and you need to make sure you're in the right place and all that kind of stuff. Like, I'm not advising just jumping without looking kind of thing. But then once you actually commit to doing it, it's amazing how people around you who previously you were saying, I would, like in my case, I would do website design for people as a side thing while I had a real job. And then some people would hear I would do that, but wouldn't come talk to me about it. But as soon as I committed to being website design guy, businessman, person, then it was like, oh, you're actually in this. Okay. And it was like literally months difference. Like I wasn't doing anything different. I was still just as committed to finishing a project for a client in my mind. And, you know, but once you're actually committed to doing it, people, other people take you more seriously and are willing to invest in you, even though it feels like all you did was sign some papers, maybe set up an LLC or whatever your case may be and stuff like that. But it's kind of like you're on the boat now with everybody else trying to swim and they're not just standing on shore or something. There's probably a better analogy there, but
yeah, I'm trying to think of a better
this isn't
aquatic analogy. Yeah, there.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're an aircraft carrier and not.
Yeah, exactly. While I was talking, this is probably why I couldn't come up with a good analogy, because I shouldn't scroll through a website while I'm trying to talk. But there was an episode of your show, bringing it back to the podcast, I think it was the How to Start Getting Paid to Make Videos for Others, maybe, but where you're just talking about charging clients for work. And I think it applies to people with podcasting or whatever your thing might be. But it was a really good discussion you had with your guest that kind of opened my eyes, even after having been doing this for 5 years now almost, of charging clients for work, of how to position yourself, how to talk to clients about it, how to just that whole process, which I know is, so I'll put that in the show notes. I think that was it was episode 22. I think that was the one I was thinking of, but that I listened to a little while ago. But yeah, just to... something about the way, I'll have to go back and re-listen again, I guess, but something about the way your guest had put it in that show and your guys' discussion about it kind of helped formulate a little better plan for me as far as pricing and things like that, which is again, why doing a show like yours, I think, and what I've really enjoyed is, again, your transparency too with some of that stuff, where sometimes, like, you run the risk, I guess, of a potential client listening to one of your podcasts or video, watching a video, let's say on pricing or something, and then thinking, okay, I've got Caleb figured out. Here's what I need to do to get lower price or something, you know, or whatever. But
yeah, or a current client that we don't name, that maybe we say something went wrong, and they're like, wait, that went wrong? I didn't know it went wrong, or
right?
They didn't tell me. You know, I think I try to be as open as possible on the podcast, and we talk specifically about what it's like to work with clients, and so some of our episodes are about what it's like to hire a videographer or what it's like to hire an editor. And we have to use real examples that have happened with us. And we share mistakes that have hurt projects that we've done or made them harder to complete, or maybe we've had to redo certain parts of them or something like that. But I think that shows honesty a little bit more. And I mean, you can still see the final videos. You can still know how things turned out, but there's always like something that got into the meat grinder that ends up in the sausage that you at least want to know about it, I guess.
Yeah. And I think that's exactly, and that's the thing. People can always, they'll see the final product. And in those cases, the clients, let's say who you know, you had to accidentally deleted some audio and you had to go back and get it or whatever the case was, but they still got the finished product and know that it ended up good. And chances are most clients, I know with my thing too, with websites and stuff, they don't have the time to be listening to your podcast because they're off doing their business or whatever, and they're not necessarily interested in how a website design studio or a video production studio actually works. They just want the video. But by the same token, it is refreshing, I guess, to actually hear. And again, that's why I was saying with that episode I listened to on charging, is it's just kind of refreshing to hear people talk openly about that and not always in a negative way about like clients are so frustrating or whatever, but just here's the reality of doing this kind of work, and this is my experience, but your experience will vary obviously. And yeah, I guess we are turning this into a business discussion.
Shoot. One last thing before we do get into like technical podcasting stuff is my friend Sean McCabe, who runs the Sean West podcast network now, they just made it multiple podcasts, but he has this thing about client work where there's no such thing as clients from hell. And I don't know if you've ever been to that website, Clients from Hell, before, mm-hmm. where people post emails or text conversations with clients that they have and unreasonable requests and what they expect from you and all that kind of stuff. And what Sean says is that all that stuff's your fault. Like, you have to choose the right client. If you know it's going to be a bad client or you suspect that, then don't work with them. If they are going to be someone that's hard to work with, quote them a rate that you're willing to work with them at that price for, or, you know, educate them so they understand the process and they don't come mad at you a month down the line expecting something that wasn't part of the agreement. So it's all on you as the consultant, as the person that gets hired, to educate them, choose people that are the best fit, and, you know, not end up having a client from hell.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a tough thing that I know I learn every time I think I'm either naive or assume the best in everybody or assume that we're all on the same page, and which is a terrible thing to be doing with a client. But it comes back to me because they, like you said, they don't know the process. They don't build websites every couple months. They do this once every two months. And the same, I would guess, with you with video, aside from some reoccurring clients, I'm sure it's like they get their one video for their promo or their conference video once a year or whatever the case may be. And they're not doing video all the time because that's why they came to you, right?
So yeah, and stuff that you just, you know, assume that people know, they probably don't.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There's a book I've been reading. This is the last thing on the business side, but it will. Mike Montero had just recently wrote a book. You're My Favorite Client, or I'm Your Favorite, something like that. That You're My Favorite Client, and I've heard good things. I haven't read it yet, but I read his previous book, and definitely helped with as far as running a business and design process, anyways. It's on my to read list, I guess, as well as something that's sort of educating and helping clients. And potentially you could give them this book if it's a long ongoing client. That's kind of the idea of how things might work, or explaining some of the process. But obviously, for the most part, it's just you need to educate yourself on how to educate your clients on some of that stuff, and do a little bit of hand-holding if needs be, and explaining, over-explaining if possible. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so this wraps up the first episode of Show Me Your Business.
Hey, there's a good spin-off. No, I feel like it's funny in that any podcaster probably who's been doing this for a while has like 30 ideas for a podcast every other day, a new show, because it's always easy to start a new show and, you know, come up with new artwork, and that's all fun and exciting, and it's hard to keep grinding away at the same one or whatever for a while. But yeah, there's a guy on Twitter, Jordan Cooper. Anytime I reply, anything I tweet, basically, he replies back to me with, show me your whatever I happen to be tweeting about. So.
Oh, that's funny. show me your cat.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, it's all good. Okay, so back to podcasting. Actually, maybe what I'll do is, speaking of business, we'll take a quick break to thank a Small Orange, who, it's not a sponsor, it's an affiliate link. It's a way you can support Show Me Your Mic. But if you need some web hosting for your, maybe a business, maybe a podcast, maybe your new video series, your video show, whatever you're looking to do, you can check out a Small Orange. Links are in the show note, show notes at goodstuff.fm/smym/80. And, basically, a Small Orange, they have a simple vision, perfecting hosting while maintaining a homegrown feel with a focus on people, their customers, their employees, and their community. A Small Orange isn't like those big hosting conglomerates. They don't promise unlimited plans that are actually hindered by hidden limitations. Instead, you're only responsible for paying for the resources you need. Whether you're just starting your own little blog or running a powerful e-commerce site, they have a plan for you. And like I mentioned in the past, before I wanted to recommend them at all, I set up an account for myself and recorded a little screencast video using ScreenFlow and stuff, and set up a website, registered a domain, installed WordPress, and wrote the first blog post, which, again, you can check out the link to that YouTube video at goodstuff.fm/smym/80. Link to a Small Orange there and the YouTube video if you want to check that out. And if you do so, sign up with them. If you use that link, you'll be supporting me and Show Me Your Mic. So thanks to a Small Orange, and to you potentially if you set up a site. Okay, so your podcast, we'll stick to maybe the audio side first, and then I'll touch the video as well. But with audio, what gear are you using these days for recording your show?
So I kind of actually want to share my journey of getting to this point. It's fairly short.
I've
had a ton of different things. But when I first started podcasting, everyone said Blue Yeti. It's the cheapest, best microphone you can get for the price. And so I got the Blue Yeti, and recording with that in an office that is basically a glorified box is the worst, because there's so much echo. And even if you get really close to the microphone and talk really quietly with a pop filter, like there's still echo, and it drives me nuts. So I eventually went with a Heil PR40, because that's what everyone was using. And I used that for a year and a half or so. And I just recently got a Shure SM7B, and I really like how it sounds. I like that it's a little bit fuller sounding than the Heil. I think the Heil is a little bit nasally, at least how I had it set up directly into a Focusrite 2i2. So without proper, you know,
preamp and
yeah. and mixing of it, and without doing a ton of post on it, I just started to feel like it was lacking a little bit. And now I think the Heil can sound amazing for certain types of voices and for certain setups, but for keeping it super simple and super minimal, I've really been liking the SM7B.
Yeah. And that's, again, even going back to the Blue Yeti too, there's certain scenarios, and this is what I think people often sort of miss in the nuance, they miss the nuance in the conversation that happens on Twitter often, where you're like, hey, famous person, what mic should I use? And they just say, use this, and because it's what I use or whatever. And there is so many, like you said, variables that actually don't get discussed there, and not to the fault necessarily of the famous person A or B, but your voice, the room that you're in, whether you have other gear that you're using beforehand, all that kind of stuff comes into play before you even just talk about which mic you should use. Because there is folks who use the Blue Yeti with much success, but they have a great room for it maybe, or they have a super quiet house without kids shouting in the next room like I do. Those kinds of things.
So, I actually recorded the first 5 episodes of my podcast in a closet because it sounded better.
Right, exactly.
And then it just wasn't feasible because it would just get so hot in there with my little laptop fan. And
yeah.
So I stopped, and I wanted to be on video for people that I hadn't met before. And so I did record in a closet, and those were the best sounding ones on the Blue Yeti because of all the clothes and everything. But I think that the simplest entry level one that I've found is the Audio-Technica 2100.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah. you can do USB, and it's super simple for people, and it's dynamic instead of condenser, I believe. And you can then later upgrade and plug it in XLR if you want. So I have a friend that I do a random nerd podcast with called Nerd Cred. Episodes come out whenever we want them to, and he uses that, and it sounds pretty good.
Yeah, the price you can't be beat, because it's like whatever it is in the States or in US dollars is something like 60 or 70 bucks or something like that.
Yeah, I think it's around there.
Yeah. And so it's crazy actually how good a mic it is for how cheap it is. And hopefully more folks, and like you said, it's been talked about a few times on this show too, because it's one that you can grow with. Like, even if you upgrade to the big fancy mixer, if that's your goal someday, it's easy enough to have that around as a second or third mic if you have guests in your studio or whatever, and just use that as an option. So definitely worth checking out if you're getting started. The SM7B, and then you've probably got some sort of tripod, or not tripod, I'm talking video, shock mount mic thing that you're using.
Yeah, so when I'm up in my office, which I've actually stopped recording podcasts in, I had just the Heil boom arm. I think it's like the something 40 or something like that, with a little shock cage for my Heil PR40 that I used. But now that I'm down in my little garage studio that I have for making videos, I have a bunch of soundproofing up in here, and so I try to record my podcasts in here. And so I have just a traditional mic stand that nice. It's on.
Yeah, I'll just throw in a little plug for Heil, because I have a PR40 with the PL-2T boom stand thing and the shock mount thing, and it's well over I don't know, it's probably almost 3 or 4 years now that I've had it, but there was something going goofy with the little shock mount adapter to the boom arm, and I'd been putting off trying to figure out what was wrong with it, because I thought, oh, it's just going to be like this $5 part, especially up in Canada here, I'm gonna have to pay like $30 or $50 to get it shipped, and it's just gonna be this pain. And so I just called them, and then got on the line with someone at Heil, and the support person there, and she was just amazing, and was like, I'll just email you out some parts, and whichever one works, just, you know, let us know or whatever, but no worries. And I was like, here it is, way out of warranty, and they're happy to just, I'm holding it in front of me here, this little thing. I still haven't put it on yet because I'm lazy like that, but it's great support anyways, well after the fact that Heil's had for me. So, but talk to me a bit about soundproofing. And I know this probably overlaps a little bit with some of the video work you're doing and isn't necessarily directly to podcasting, but the principles still apply. So, because that's something usually I record in my office here, which is a bit of a flat room, walled room kind of thing, like you were saying. But my family is usually gone this morning just because school's out. kids are home and my wife happened to schedule a bunch of other friends coming over with all their kids. And so there may be some shouts in the mic that you hear because it isn't a soundproof room yet. What steps did you take in terms of soundproofing?
So the garage that I'm in is basically a long one-car garage. And so I have most of it for the video studio piece. And the first thing I did was I laid down some carpet. I just had extra carpet from the in-laws that they didn't need. And so I took it and laid that down. That helped a little bit. And then I took to the walls and I have this kind of recycled paper looking foam that's about 2 inches thick. And I can look up the site it's from just in a minute here. But it just has sticky stuff on the side and it just sticks right to the wall. And I have 9 of those up on like 6 on the main wall and then, you know, 3 on the short wall. And that's just where it's about waist height to like above my head. That's about what it covers because that's where the bulk of all my sound goes when I speak and everything. And then I got some extra, like the regular, you know, kind of triangle or pyramid looking foam that just like has ridges and stuff. Got a bunch of extra pieces of that from Pat Flynn. And I put it around the walls and I attached some to the ceiling directly above me. And I don't know what I'm doing, honestly. Like, I know that you're supposed to have a certain amount of reflection and of sound and a certain amount of absorption. And you can hire companies to tell you exactly what you should do. I just wanted the room to be dead. I just wanted the room to be dead sounding because I really don't need the reverb. I'm not recording music. It's just strictly voices. And so I just don't want echo. Like, that's my biggest goal. And I also have some curtains that I've hung as well that are just from little eye hooks. And those are like separating this area of the garage from the other area of the garage. So I have like a pretty good sound dampened little space here. And you do hear some echo, but it's not nearly as bad as it was before.
Yeah, and that goes back to a bit of what you were saying, I think maybe before we started recording, I forget, but you know, a bit of being wanting to be a professional and / perfectionist with some of your production, right? And because I know often, and I feel like too, sometimes it's like, well, how much of a difference is it really going to make when it feels like it sounds okay, I sound good, I think I sound great or whatever, and like how much difference is all that work going to be? But I know here at Good Stuff, one of the other hosts of Web Friends, a guy named Garth, he built himself a little studio in his garage. Sounds, you know, similar to what you're doing, but he actually did like construction and put up walls and stuff because he does a lot of screencasting as well as podcasting. And so, but he did a test of like beforehand and after with all this. He did like some crazy expensive, I think, or sound expensive soundproofing kind of stuff into this little space that he built. And it is like, even just with a compressed MP3, there is a difference in terms of the echo and the, like you're saying, and the sort of the depth that it, the fullness that it gives to your voice without, when you get rid of all that echo. And I know my situation would definitely improve if I took some efforts to, I'm just looking around the room here and trying to figure out, but anyways, if I took some efforts to employing some of that sound dampening techniques, because it is a lot of hard surfaces, a lot of bounce back and echo that I probably don't even realize because I've just been hearing it so long.
Yeah, and there's probably $500 to $600 worth of soundproofing in this garage.
Right.
And about half of that was just given to me because people weren't using it and it was just sitting in their garage storage space. So
yeah.
And you can get creative. You could use blankets, you could use mattresses, you can use, like I said, carpet. Remember there was just this random commercial, I think it was for probably Bud Light or something, where they were like, if you carpet our house, we'll give you Bud Light. And he carpeted the walls and the ceilings and the floors. And so you can do that if you want to.
Right.
That might actually help. It might look really ugly, but you know, you just have to get creative with this stuff. Like I said, I recorded early podcasts in a closet. I have, when I'm doing a bunch of podcasts or recording a bunch of videos, I'll bring in couch pillows or hang blankets over doors and things like that in my office just to reduce some echo. But that's, like you said, you can try to get perfection or you can just try to make it a little bit better and less noticeable.
Yeah, and taking, you know, baby steps or whatever towards it, like you said, using stuff that's already around your house and trying it out and recording, taking the time, I think, too, to record a before and after for yourself can help you, if you're like me and feel like sometimes the extra work or extra money expense or whatever isn't necessarily going to be worth it, recording a before and after and remembering to do the before part helps you sort of like, okay, actually this is worth it, or maybe it's not, and then you can take that stuff back or put it back in the closet or whatever it is. But yeah, just to sort of know actually that what you're doing is worthwhile, and maybe I'm just speaking to myself more than anybody else who happens to be listening.
No, I did the same thing. I recorded a before and after here, and when I was helping Pat Flynn with his garage studio, and there it was a little bit more limited because we could do the ceiling and one wall, but the other wall had a mirror and there's a hardwood floor, so we bring in a rug for the floor, and then we have dampening on, I guess it's like 3 of the 5 surfaces there. So, I mean, it helps a lot if you record a before and after and can tell. And the company that I got this stuff from and the stuff for Pat's is AudiMuteSoundproofing.com. Audi like the car, mute like the button on your TV, soundproofing.com.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, that'll be in the show notes too. And yeah, to order stuff, or there's probably, if you look locally, there might be even be some place that you could buy some of this stuff. There might be a sound music store kind of thing that can source some of this stuff too, if you're interested in that kind of stuff and trying it out, and they might have advice for you locally as well. So, cause it, like $500 sounds like either a lot of money to you, or it sounds like pennies when it comes to what your people are actually hearing. Cause again, your show, your podcast is all they get from you. They don't necessarily see the work you're putting into it or whatever. They just hear that final product, and any little bit you can do to sort of help that sound that much better is going to potentially keep people around longer or entice people to subscribe and stick around, period. So you're going into, you mentioned earlier, Audition is what you're using for recording, and you're doing much in the way of post-processing and stuff on your audio side?
So I used to use GarageBand for my old podcast, and I was really lazy. I just did podcasting voicemail, and right. that was my sweetening that I used to do. But more recently, tried to learn as much as I could about Audition and compression and noise gates and all that kind of stuff. I mainly just have some compression and some gain added, and I don't do a bunch with noise gates because it just starts to sound funky if I do too much with it. So I just kind of deal with the noise in the background. But what I do have done is, if it's a two-person podcast and the other person's talking, the other person that's silent is just deleted. So that part of the track's volume just gets all the way dropped down to negative infinity. And so my editor will just go through the episodes and do that for an episode. And it does take time. It takes at least the length of the episode, typically, even if you do it at double speed and you do everything. So, you know, a half hour to an hour each episode is spent just lowering audio on the other person's side. But you can also do it for coughs or noises and all that kind of stuff as well. And it just helps clean up the audio. So we've recorded a couple episodes where we're in the same room and you get that bleed effect on the other microphone when the other person's talking. And it does get complicated when two people are talking, but the main thing is just volume levels, a little bit of compression, and call it good. I did have Aaron Dowd, whose site is The Podcast Dude. I sent him my raw audio once I switched over to the SM7B, and he did some stuff in Logic and recorded a screen recording, and I tried to, you know, duplicate it and copy it in Audition to have the same effect.
Right. Yeah, and that's, he's been on the show, I think it was way back, episode 10, 15, somewhere in there.
Oh, he's early then, yeah.
Yeah, he's early days, but that's something where you could do what, like a one-off of get him to like produce an episode and just hear hearing the difference of like, hey, this is a guy who does this for a living. He does the Sean West show, like you said, and Shop Talk show and others. And is it worth it to pay someone else to do it, or maybe at least get some tips from him on what works for your, because again, the sort of generic advice often doesn't work great when you've got, like, my voice is fairly bassy, someone else's voice is more trebly, and there's all sorts of weird variables at play there that you want to make sure you're sort of tuning it to your specific voice, never mind your guest, obviously. I was going to mention with Logic users, and I would guess there's something in like this in Audition, it's kind of like a noise gate thing, but there is a strip silence from a track feature in Logic Pro 10, which I haven't started using yet, but Mike Hurley back on episode 74 of this show, which I'll put in the show notes, he mentioned using, he uses it over on Relay for a lot of his interviews and stuff that he does, where it just goes out and just deletes the stuff for you on a guest track, for example, in your track. It wouldn't work necessarily with Crosstalk where you're in the same room and things like that, because obviously the levels are still going to register, but could work as well if you're wanting to sort of strip some of that out. It is interesting though, because it's like that's basically what a noise gate does, but it would help with being able to quickly look at a glance at a track and figure, okay, where did he start talking, where did she start talking, and you know, and edit if you're trying to do a bit more of a produced edit job on a podcast anyways, to move pieces around and stuff. It helps with that kind of thing. So,
and once you have to edit a few episodes like that, you start to let the other person finish talking before you,
yeah,
exactly, before you talk. And so it actually helps you podcast a little bit better. It is hard over Skype because we don't have any way to know unless we're on video. But when you're sitting in the same room and you can at least let them finish, because you know every time you cut them off, it's going to be more complicated in the edit. And so, like you were saying, just hire someone to do some presets, set up a template for you with some good effects on it, and then you can use that one as long as you're using the same mics and the same setup each time. It's definitely worth the money to pay someone that knows the intricacies of all this stuff to do it at least that first time.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where, like, it's I can't speak for Aaron, but I know from talking to him, I would guess he would do that for you. He might charge you an extra few bucks or whatever for setting up a template for you in your app of choice or whatever, but definitely worth looking into, because it depends what you got into this for, but I would guess a lot of folks didn't get into it to fiddle with compression and stuff. They just want to talk and have the podcast, the end result, be the thing that they're doing. And any sort of effort you can make to streamline that process so that you can spend more of your time doing the podcast, less of your time editing the show. Unless, again, you're an audio nerd and you love obsessing over that, then by all means, obviously don't outsource it. But you're probably not listening to this show if you're that obsessed about it. Where was I going to go? The Crosstalk thing. Oh yeah, with Fizzle. I remember you used to often, like, Chase and Corbett would be in the same room, and then you'd be brought in on Skype, right?
Oftentimes, probably about half of them were like that.
Right. Which I always remembered feeling kind of like it's just tough, because you're like, those two can obviously look at each other, talk, and know when they're going to talk, and you're kind of like, do I talk now, and that you're the one dealing with the delay and they're not, kind of thing. And it must have made, I think, was it Chase who was doing a lot of the audio editing on that show, or were you doing some of the audio?
Chase did the audio editing on that.
Yeah, I would guess, you know, that just made for, like you said, a bit of a tough edit in terms of figuring everybody out and figuring out when they're stopping and starting and talking over each other and all that kind of stuff. But the end result was good.
In person is always better, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can even go super simple and just use one microphone if it's the same distance between people. I've used the Yeti for that before. As long as it's about the same distance, people are about the same volume level, like, you can get what you need from it. But I think in person is the best energy wise for a podcast. And all the ones I've done in person, I've felt way better about. And when I've listened back to them, they're much quicker. There's more humor typically. And I just think they're better overall. And some of my favorite podcasts are done in person. And so I think those are the best. Obviously, you can't do that with all of them,
though. Yeah. This show doesn't have that budget. Otherwise, I'd love to come down. I forget, you're down in California somewhere, I think, right?
San Diego.
Yeah. And we got snow here today. So it would be lovely to be down in San Diego in person doing the show for reasons other than podcasting, but even just podcasting alone. On the video side of what you're doing with the show, your video show, you have your podcast comes out, audio podcast is supposed to come out Thursday, videos Tuesday, or to have those backwards maybe?
No, that's right.
Yeah. Which is speaks to, like you said earlier, the just releasing things on a regular schedule helps both you, I think, as the producer to, and like you said, life happens obviously, but helps you. And then I know for me, once I switched to this show being like, it's recording Tuesday morning and it comes out Tuesday after I edit it, and that's what it does. And barring, you know, guests who need other recording times, it's just made it so easy for me to just commit in every other area of my life to Tuesday morning being when Show Me Your Mic is recorded and produced, edited, etc. But then also, I would guess, you know, for listeners and stuff, they know when to expect a new show and are excited and wondering if it's not there, what's going on and that kind of stuff. And looking forward to when new episodes come out, and definitely helps build listenership for a show as well. So when you're doing the video side of things, how how are you sort of producing that and prepping, and what's your process for the video podcast side?
So for the video podcast, what that is what I'm putting out on YouTube just repurposed. And the only difference has been the ending, like call to action. I don't do any of the annotation thumbnail things that you can do on YouTube. I just don't put that in the podcast file. So when I export, I just cut off that part and do a different kind of compression on the file for iTunes. But prep for that is typically write a script, have a teleprompter, and deliver the script, try to keep the video super short, and then I list out the B-roll when I'm writing the script of what I want, and I shoot the B-roll at the exact same time, edit it out, I export a 1080p high bitrate file that then goes to YouTube, and then for iTunes, I do 720p, and I do like a 2 megabit per second bitrate on the video, so it's not quite as high quality, but you really can't tell because most people are going to be watching it on a phone or an iPad. And I've even put it up on a TV and watched both, and it looks pretty much the same even at 720p. So that's kind of the process that I use. The site that I use to host my video podcast is Podbean, and I was going to use Libsyn. It gets pricey though with video because of file sizes and bandwidth. I was going to try to use Wistia, but they don't support anything above 360p for their RSS feed. Just basically nobody uses it. And so I went with Podbean because for, I think, $18 or $25 a month, you can get unlimited uploads and hosting and bandwidth. So if you're getting tens of thousands of downloads per episode, you don't have additional charges.
Yeah, which I remember hearing you, I was just trying to find the link to it, but you were on Pat Flynn's show, just talking about producing his show, which, and that's where you had mentioned, I think at that time, Podbean as well. And it seems almost, you know, again, for some folks, maybe it's $18 a month if you pay for the whole year, or $25 if you pay monthly. That maybe seem like a lot of money, but knowing, again, what hosting, like you mentioned, some of the other ones, Libsyn, et cetera, it's actually a crazy good deal in terms of keeping things simple and easy. And obviously it's been working, I guess, in terms of a quick review of Podbean as a service for you. It's worked well.
Yeah. I don't think there's a really good podcasting house anywhere. Like all of them have their, all have their issues, but Podbean works, and you can finagle it a little bit to get the RSS feed exactly how you want it in iTunes. And I'm actually running it through Feedburner, which I know is like, God forsaken.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going to happen with them. But the one added bonus is being in 4 additional iTunes categories because Podbean only gets you into 1. So I don't know if that was worth it or not, but worst case, I can always redirect the feed and just take the feed from Podbean. And then for my old podcast, those are still on Libsyn, my audio ones. But then my new podcast is actually through SoundCloud. Just because I want to experiment with that. So any of the downloads show up as stats in SoundCloud.
How is that compared for you? Compared to using Libsyn and SoundCloud in terms of workflow and stuff, is it any different really? Or
I think that SoundCloud is a little bit easier to use, but the only issue I have is that it's not fully podcast supported yet, so you can't schedule episodes in advance. So if you upload an episode, that date is the date of the episode.
Right.
So that's really frustrating.
And you're a part of SoundCloud's podcaster beta thing? Is that
that's
what you have to be sort of get in on or whatever, which I don't think is that difficult to get into. Just sort of have to request it and maybe work through their process or whatever. But I noticed in Logic now it's got publishing right to SoundCloud, which again I've experimented with a little bit. I'm always wary of some of those kinds of things, but just being a maybe too much of a control freak or whatever with some of that stuff. But I could see a scenario where it would be nice just, you know, after we finish talking, I edit it and just hit publish and it's right away out to SoundCloud and not, I don't have to, isn't that intermediary step of uploading it myself manually and things like that. So,
The only thing I would be concerned about with that is if it gets tagged. And so I always export individually from Audition and then I tag it with ID3 editor and then I upload it.
Right.
Editor and do it sometimes.
Yeah. Someday podcasting will get simpler and we'll have, it still feels like a little bit archaic sometimes when you think about all the little steps we have to do to just get a podcast out there, but It is better than it used to be. I shouldn't be.
I mean, you can hit record on SoundCloud's website and
yeah, that's true.
Stop and you'd be done, but you don't have the show notes or the proper ID3 tags for people that are looking at it on a podcast app. And
yeah,
there's just going that extra mile for quality wise. Like every podcast episode I do a custom piece of artwork that shows up on my site so that on social media it's more attractive for people to watch that episode, and then I can have a more interesting looking archive page for all my podcast episodes. And so, I mean, I've even taken some of the photos, and so then I have to edit them, and then I have to put in Photoshop and put the text on them. And so it's extra time when I could just record the audio and put it out there. But I think the extra piece of polish is helpful. And so just the fact that in my podcasting app, if someone mentions something and in the show notes, I can click on a link and open it in a browser right away. Like that's a cool thing. And yeah. If people go the extra mile to add that kind of detail into their show notes, then, you know, I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, definitely. And that's definitely something I know at Good Stuff here, a podcast network, we strive to like some of those things that it feels like we look at some of the stats and stuff and wonder, okay, how, if five people out of the 200 or whatever actually click on a link to a show, are you spinning your wheels sometimes with some of this extra work of show notes and whatever? And there's like all the SEO stuff aside, like I'm just talking about human to human interactions and stuff that we actually do all this extra work for. And sometimes it feels like, oh, is it really worth it? But that is like the delight of, or delighting a listener or a potential client with some of those little touches is, I think, infinitely worth it, because you can't really put price on it exactly, and you don't really know, because nobody's going to really shout it from the rooftops how amazing the show notes were on Caleb's podcast. But they really do appreciate it when they get to, like you said, have that little touch, a little extra bit of polish. And looking at the if I'm looking for a video pod or an audio podcast about how to do video, and I look at your site and then I look at some of the other sites, not mentioning any names or whatever, but just, you know, stuff like you said, some of the extra polish that you put into it, it just is more enticing, it's more interesting, it looks better. And at the end of the day, that's really what it's about. You want to attract new listeners, and so that's what you got to do to get that happening, I guess. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't go crazy with show notes. It's just links to things I put in there, and then, you know, 3 to 5 sentences teasing what we're talking about, and that's about it. I mean, I keep it pretty simple. It's just the image, the 3 to 5 sentences, the SoundCloud player, links to iTunes and SoundCloud and other places, and then, yeah, links for the show notes. I don't write exhaustive show notes for referencing certain timestamps or anything like that, just because I don't have the capacity to do so or want to spend the budget on it. But I know people that do, and they get the extra SEO juice from it and things like that. So, I mean, do as much work as you can outside of the audio file. And I think people do actually notice it.
Yeah.
And appreciate it.
With just going back to your video show for a second, the two questions I guess you'd mentioned with Podbean, you're taking the RSS feed from them, and that's what you submit to iTunes as, or no, sorry, you run it through Feedburner, right? You said Podbean's.
Yeah, for the video podcast, I run it through Feedburner.
Is there a scenario where you could have that? I'm just thinking, like, you know, how we use, say, someone might use WordPress with Libsyn, where Libsyn is the host, but the feed is actually that you submit, let's say, it might be a WordPress with PowerPress or whatever plugin installed. Can you do something like that with Podbean, where it's just like the host and you get the direct link to the file for the video file, or does that get complicated because it's video somehow?
No, I'm pretty sure you can do the exact same thing.
Okay.
Yeah, even though it's video, it's still an RSS file or RSS feed, and it's an MP4 instead of an MP3. So
yeah.
I don't think it's any different. It's just I don't know about PowerPress and their video players and stuff.
Right,
like that.
Yeah, that stuff aside. But yeah, and one thing you'd mentioned on that episode of Smart Passive Income, talking with Pat Flynn about how you were doing his show, you'd mentioned, I thought it was worth reiterating here maybe, and then that's a teaser, maybe go listen to more of it on his show. But you told the story of someone finding about you through, because you had the video podcast, and that's where I think often folks struggle with video, because it is a lot of extra work, bandwidth, storage, cameras, you know, lights, etc., managing all that stuff. But there is a huge audience just paying attention to video that could care less about audio. And yeah, do you have some thoughts on that as it's related to what you're doing and then possibly for other folks?
And vice versa, there's people that will only listen to audio and don't care right. at all about video. So you kind of need to be where people are. And I've gotten a decent amount of flack about having an audio podcast about video, but I mean, people listen to it and there are downloads, and I get emails all the time of people that enjoy the show. So it's just a matter of what can you talk about and what can you share with those different mediums. Conversations like we're having right now are perfect for audio. There is something to be said about having a 30 to 45 minute conversation that is recorded on video, but how much does that add complexity wise to making it happen when realistically you could just have that in audio form? So I don't know. I like both. I'm obviously biased towards video because I do that kind of production for people, and that's what I've invested the time learning how to do. But it is more complicated. It's cost more. You know, when people balk at spending a few hundred dollars on a microphone, you can't even get a camera for a few hundred dollars that you're going to use that's going to look good. So it's more expensive and more time consuming to do video. But depending on what you're doing, maybe you should be using video to share what you're talking about or teach or entertain or do whatever it is that you're doing. And so I'm an advocate for both. And I think that it is cool to be in different formats for people to consume in different ways.
Yeah. And I think, like we mentioned earlier, in case it wasn't clear though, like your audio podcast is its own thing and your video show is its own thing. You're not necessarily.
Oh yeah. I'm not just stripping
duplicating.
Audio.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, I guess I could see someone making an argument, and I've toyed with the idea of, you know, just putting the audio onto YouTube and you maybe add some video stuff elements to it for someone to listen to. And there's arguments to be made, I guess, because YouTube is basically a search engine on its own. And so, you know, it helps to be on there. But we at Good Stuff Anyways, in a little bit, we've played with it, haven't seen huge results. But I know there are folks who are doing similar things with that kind of idea. And it can work. But I like your approach in that there are two separate things, but they're both kind of like a, to use the business term, a sales funnel or whatever, a listener funnel back to who you are, and appealing to that audience is the way that you speak to someone on video versus you speak to someone on audio.
And I like it to be native to the format. So if it is audio, I'd like it to truly be only audio. And if it's video, I'd like it to truly be video.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how I feel about people that have a podcast and then they put it on YouTube and then they just have a static image or something like that. If you're at least going through the trouble of recording the Skype talking head, then that's fine. Some people want to watch it that way and consume it that way. But when I did that for a couple tests of my own podcast, I'd probably get 10 to 20% of the people watching it in video, and 80 to 90% would just listen to it. So like views on YouTube versus downloads on iTunes. So I'd rather just sacrifice the trouble that it takes to go through and edit Skype talking heads and make the audio podcast better and spend that extra time making a separate video specifically for it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where, on YouTube, anybody can go see, generally, unless you turned it off, I guess, but see the stats or whatever. And it's kind of like you get 10 views on your video that in audio form, you get 1,000 or whatever listens to. And it's a little bit demoralizing sometimes or whatever too, to think that. And again, but I think, like you said, it's because it's not really that interesting when it's just a audio only thing or repurposed audio. Because in the conversation, you talk differently to someone when it's just audio. You are doing different things. You reference things. If it's in video, you can show each other things, all that kind of stuff. You're talking about physical world, real world stuff, and you don't do that in audio form, or you compensate for it in audio form that you wouldn't in video. And so, yeah. All right. Well, in wrapping up, we've talked through some gear. The last question I asked folks, and we talked about a little bit at the beginning in your story, but podcasts that you're listening to these days, is there anything that you're, any shows that you're listening to or watching, I guess, as it may be?
So the main ones that I listen to are 99% Invisible by Roman Mars and his team. I listen to, let's see, I'm scrolling through my app. I really like Hardcore History with Dan Carlin. He also has a show that comes out more frequently called Common Sense. I listen to Sean West's, Sean McCabe's podcast about entrepreneurship and business. The Fizzle Show, which I was on for the first, I guess, 60 episodes or so.
You still listen to those jerks? You... I'm just kidding.
And then...
trying to create fake drama that is...
That's funny. I listen, or I actually watch Film Riot. It's a filmmaking...
Oh, that's a great one, yeah.
YouTube channel, but they have a video podcast feed as well. And so I use that to consume it, because what I do... And why I'm a huge fan of video podcasts is I don't go to YouTube every day or every week to sit down and watch stuff. Occasionally on a weekend or something, I'll open the YouTube app on my Apple TV and I'll watch a handful of things. But if I get a video downloaded to my phone, it will be watched. And so having a video podcast and they download automatically. And then if I'm on a flight or I'm on a trip or something and maybe I don't have access to the internet, I will... watch a bunch of them that way. So I'd prefer to have stuff automatically downloaded to my phone and I can watch it without having to wait for it to load. And so that's why I'm a big fan of video podcasts. And that's Film Riot is one of the reasons why I chose to go that route too.
Yeah, that's if you're, again, just like I was saying with your show, where it's someone who's actually doing the thing that they're talking about for a living. And I've lost track of those guys. I used to watch a bunch every week, their episodes on YouTube and stuff back, I don't know, maybe a year or two ago before I fizzled, as it were, on the idea of getting involved with video for a while. Because it is just like I find your show, really inspiring. They're funny guys, obviously, too, and have a lot of fun with the stuff they're doing and goofy and whatever, but explaining stuff really well and that kind of thing, and just entertaining to watch. But they're also, at the time they were making a documentary, I don't know what they're doing these days, but they were also shooting a documentary or a short film or something at the time, and talking about the stuff that you don't actually usually get to see on real movies. They sort of, you know, the behind-the-scenes stuff on DVDs are heavily produced and aren't really showing you the nitty gritty of what's actually going on. So cool. What app are you using to play your podcast with? You mentioned on your phone.
So I actually use the native one. I have played around with a few of the other ones, but there wasn't a specific feature that made me want to ditch the standard podcast app. And it's gotten better with being able to choose how many get downloaded, if they get downloaded automatically, deleting them after you've listened to them, which is good. So I've stuck with the basic one. My one little added thing that I picked up from Chase Reeves is to use Huffduffer for random audio that I want to have in my podcast app. So if there's a single episode of some podcast, instead of going into the app, opening that show, downloading the episode, I'll just use Huffduffer to add it to the Huffduffer feed and do it that way. I know Chase gets a little bit more advanced where he'll download like a YouTube video that he really just wants to hear the audio of, and then he'll upload that to somewhere and then Huffduff that file. So you can get pretty complex and get through stuff in your podcast app a little bit better by using Huffduffer. So that's kind of my little pro tip for podcasting.
I actually just, speaking of Huffduffer, and I'm pretty sure this is where Chase heard about it, was Merlin Mann posting about it way back in the day. But Merlin just, that's the wrong one. That's not the link I was looking for. He just posted about a little workflow thing of Huffduff video where it actually automatically extracts the audio from videos on YouTube, Vimeo, and many more sites and sends it straight to Huffduffer. So if you're like me or Chase or Caleb and you use Huffduffer, I'll put a link in the show notes if I can find the link. And it basically, yeah, apparently will just, it's a bookmarklet just like you use for Huffduffer, and it just, you on a YouTube video, you just click the link and somehow through magic, it stores the file for 90 days and then you can automatically listen to it on your podcast player of choice. So pretty crazy, kind of awesome internet stuff going on there.
And how did you find that? He tweeted about it or?
Yeah, on his Tumblr, his site. So I'll, it's just huffduff-video-snarfed.org is the anyways, so I haven't tried it yet. Your mileage may vary. I trust that Merlin has tried it at least before you, but maybe he hasn't, who knows. Yeah, that's a great way to try out shows, Huffduffer, on the audio side, but this could be interesting for video, audio from video too. So and I think, yeah, it's funny, whenever I ask folks on this show, there's a bit of like a embarrassment, like kind of, you know, kicking the ground or whatever, like I'm using the native podcast app, I guess. And which is funny. And I get it a little bit, but it is like, it actually has been a lot better. I know with my wife, I've said, oh, you should be using Pocket Cast or you should be using these other ones. And she's like, why? It's just work. It works. Why do I need to go and try all these other stuff? And it syncs with iTunes fairly well, as I understand, as far as play counts or what you've played and things like that. So, and the video obviously works well, because not every podcast player on the iPhone, for example, will support video very well. But yours, obviously the native one, is working well enough if you're a video guy, and its playback is okay.
Yeah, it plays back fine. I have no issues with it.
Cool. All right. Well, I was going to say, in the last episode, we got into someone mentioning, speaking of Show Me Your Business, the Show Me Your Board Games. Do you play board games at all?
I would love to play more board games. I have in the past. one of my favorites is actually it's a card game, but it comes in a board game box, Dominion.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that.
And that's a really good one, but you need to have two or three nerdy friends to play it with, because my wife will not play the game. we will throw down Ticket to Ride every once in a while, though. There are a handful of other board games I'm trying to think. I really like Axis and Allies. That's another one where you need like nerdy friends to play with, though.
Yeah, and a lot of time.
Yeah. So I do like to play board games, but I have not played them much recently.
Yeah. It's just a funny little accidental segment that I'm throwing in the show here just for fun. But that's Axis and Allies. Actually, I got it 15 years ago or something. Somebody gave it to me for Christmas or something. And I've actually never played. I've played the game with other people's games, but I've never, it's a box sitting. I'm waiting for my kids to discover it and just like tear it apart or something and just play with it, but not use it as the actual game. But so I actually have like sort of an unboxed Axis and Allies game sitting there that's never been played.
My little board. Yeah, me too. I got it like for Christmas, I think.
Oh, really?
A little year ago. I haven't played it yet.
Yep. Nice.
Another game is Diplomacy, which I've played probably only once. But it's like Axis and Allies or Risk, where there's, you know, Europe and you have to control land and everything. But there's no rolling, so there's no chance. And in between every round, everyone goes and they negotiate with each other. And they say, well, I'm going to invade this country, so don't invade me. Because if you both invade, nobody gets it. And so it's just a lot of backstabbing. It's lots of fun. You should try it out. Diplomacy.
Okay. Cool.
Well, no one is friends at it. So.
Yeah, exactly. You're all enemies and you hate each other, but at least you got to have a fun game. I guess that's why you've only played it once, right? Because all your friends hate you now.
Yeah. That group of friends didn't want to play it ever again.
Need new friends. All right. Well, if you're interested in being Caleb's friend, where can they find you on the internet, Caleb?
I'm at Caleb Wojcik, CalebWojcik on Twitter. My website is DIYVideoGuy.com. You can find the audio podcast, the video show, all that stuff there.
And worth mentioning, too, that your relaunch, your version 2, I guess, of your course, video course, if you're at all interested in video, Caleb is a great guy to learn from. And the course is loading, and I'm almost there, so I'm just stalling.
There are a lot of images on that page.
Yeah, 10 hours of lessons. There's a few different packages you have, starting at, 49
is the low one, yeah.
Right. And on up, obviously, for varying amounts of video and all sorts of stuff that you get. And definitely, if you're at all, like if you want to sort of skip the line and don't want to have to scour YouTube for a variety of like learning from one person about this thing and learning from another person about this thing, I would heartily recommend checking out Caleb's course and whatever package interests you, obviously, and where it's applicable. But definitely a great guy to learn from about this stuff. And he speaks about it in a great, easy to understand way, but you feel infinitely smarter after having watched or listened, as the case may be. Thanks, Caleb, for coming on Show Me Your Mic and showing me your business, showing me your brains, all the various segments of the show.
All the different episodes we recorded today.
All the great ones. And my thanks to you. If you check out A Small Orange, like I said, if you need some website hosting, feel free to check them out. If you'd like to support Show Me Your Mic and my podcasting efforts a little more directly, you can do so on my Patreon, patreon.com/iChris, if you want to check that out. As I mentioned last week, I'll throw a link in again. I was a guest on the Fellow Good Stuff Network show, I Guess We're Grown Up, Carrie Halstead's show called I Guess We're Grown Ups Now, recently talking about being away from Twitter and sort of the fear of missing out or the joy of missing out and stuff like that. So chat with her if you're curious at all about some of my thoughts on that kind of thing. Good stuff is at goodstuff_FM on Twitter. I'm iChris on Twitter, back on Twitter. So don't follow me if you want me tweeting now. Show Me Your Mic is SMYM underscore FM. I started a new thing for Caleb. It was probably, I did it too much, too late, and haven't, properly explain it, but asking questions for future guests. I'll try and tweet out as soon as I know ahead of time who the guest is going to be for the week coming up. And if you use the hashtag AskSMYM, I think is what I said it as, and have a question for the show, possibly for that guest, or just in general about podcasting that you'd like us to maybe discuss with whoever the guest might be. If you throw that hashtag on your tweet somewhere, you don't even have to tweet it at the Show Me Your Mic Twitter account, but you can tweet at me or whatever. Then it'll just get it automatically added to a Google Doc spreadsheet thing, and I'll use it for a future show if you would like to submit that. That'd be awesome. Or you can email me, chris@goodstuff.fm, if you have questions, comments, concerns about the show. And finally, if you would like to be on the show, appointlet.goodstuff.fm. No, that's not right. goodstuff.appointlet.com is where you can go. The link is in the show notes at goodstuff.fm/SMYM. That's enough of a ramble. Thank you for listening. Have a good day. Bye.